the best time to start was, you know, yesterday or 10 years ago. The next best time to start is right now. Like, that time is going to pass anyway. I say do it. It is not too late. All this stuff is learnable. It's more and more doable by the day.
I'm Amy Porterfield, ex-corporate girl turned CEO of a multi-7-figure business. But it wasn't all that long ago that I lacked the confidence, the budget, and the time to focus on growing my small but mighty business. Fast forward past many failed attempts and lessons learned, and you'll see the business I have today. One that changes lives and gives me more freedom than I ever thought possible. One that used to only exist as a daydream. I created the Online Marketing Made Easy podcast to give you simple, actionable, step-by-step strategies to help you do the same. If you're an ambitious entrepreneur or one in the making who's looking to create a business that makes an impact and a life you love, you're in the right place, friend. Let's get started.
Well, hey there, friend. Welcome back to another episode of Online Marketing Made Easy. Thank you so much for joining me time and time again. And if you're new here, so glad you found me, and I'm glad you're going to be part of our community. Now, today I am beyond excited for my episode because I get to interview a very, very special guest. She has been my friend for 15 years. My very first year of business, I was in a mastermind, Marie Forleo's mastermind called Rich, Happy, and Hot. And I got to meet my guest, Laura Belgray, basically on a plane ride to this first mastermind. I was so green, didn't know what I was doing. She was brand new at her business, and we became fast friends. And it's really cool to think that we have been together since the very beginning. We've seen each other's businesses grow and transform, and we're both in a really good place now where we're at. So it's really fun to look back and see kind of how far we've come together. Now, this episode is also a little spicy. I'm not going to tell you why, but you'll kind of hear at the end. And that's kind of fun too. I always record the intros and the outros of my episodes after I interview the guest because I'll kind of know where I want to go with that. And I'll say that I loved the conversation we had. It is different than most of my podcast episodes. We're not talking about funnels or necessarily like webinars or courses, but it's all kind of weaved through in the conversations we have. And Laura has a totally different approach to business than I do. And I really was excited to have her share that. So you're going to see kind of how I did it and how she did it and be reminded that there's different ways to grow a business on your terms. So again, her name is Laura Belgray, and I'm guessing most of you already know exactly who she is, but if you don't, you're in for a treat. She's the founder of her company called Talking Shrimp, and she's the co-creator of The Copy Cure, along with Marie Forleo, and she's the author of the book Tough Titties, on living your best life when you're the effing worst. Yeah, that's the name of her book. Stay with me. You're going to love to hear more about it. I promise. It's such an interesting approach to, you know, how this book came about, why she wrote it, and it's different than every other book I've ever promoted on this podcast. So I can't wait to talk about it. She's an award-winning copywriting expert, and she helps entrepreneurs find the perfect words to express and sell what they do in a way that gets them paid to be themselves. When she was writing copy for others, she doesn't do that anymore. Now she teaches others to be their own copywriters. But when she was writing copy for others, she used to write like little ditties for my podcast. In the beginning, I used to have these, I don't know what else to call them. They're like little ditties talking about what my podcast is about. And she used to write all of those and they were so good. I've since changed the format, so I don't use them anymore. She's written emails for me, and I just think she's pure genius. And if she was still for hire, I would be at the top of her list. But she has changed her business, as most of us do, moving away from a service-based business and into more of helping others learn what she knows. So that's what she does now. So we're going to talk about that as well, but we're going to dive into some copywriting tips, trends to watch out for in 2024 with writing your copy. And we're going to talk about finding your calling, even in your 40s, 50s, 60s, and beyond, and how it's never too late to dive into entrepreneurship. We're also going to chat about the exact strategies for getting paid to be you And we get into a little chat about, like I said, how different our business upbringing has looked, how I built my business versus how she has, and the mindset behind that. I think that's really powerful. To all of it, help me welcome my guest, Laura Belgray. Well, welcome back, my friend. It's been a minute since you've been on the show, so I'm so happy to have you here.
I'm so happy to be here. What was it, 2018, 2019? I don't even remember. A long time ago. Yeah.
Feels like a lifetime ago. So much has happened since then. I mean, if you were to say what's kind of new in your business and life, what would you say?
Well, I think since then, everything. Like, I think I was still working as a, quote, copywriter with, you know, services for private clients back then, and soon retired them. And now I have, you know, a group program, like a mastermind, and I have courses that I sell, and I have a book that I wrote that came out. I was probably starting to work on it, or I've been working on it for years and years, actually, but really starting to work on it when we last talked on the podcast. But now it is out in the world.
And we're going to talk about it because it is good. And it's, if you all don't know what it is, it's nothing like what you think. It's not a business book. But okay, I don't want to get off in a tangent, but so much of what you talk about can be applied to business, which I thought was interesting. So it's one of my favorites. I listened to the whole thing on Audible because it was that good. I just had to hear you read it. So I loved it. Okay, so there's nothing more attractive in the online space than feeling comfortable being you and getting paid to do so. I think that you are one of the best of the best in this area. So I want you to talk about, how can my listeners get paid to show up just as they are in the online world?
That's an excellent question. And it's funny because the question I was prepared for, that the way I thought you were going to phrase it, was how can my listeners get paid just to be themselves? I was going to have to set the record straight and say, mind you, getting paid to be you, which to me is my holy grail of work, is not the same, sadly, as getting paid to exist. So it's not, you know, pay me to eat dinner. Okay, sure, here's a check. Or like, I just watched every episode of Real Housewives Ultimate Girls Trip. Well, keep up the good work. Here is your check for $1 million. That would be nice. That is the dream. Unfortunately, people want this thing called value if they're going to fork over their money. And so getting paid to be you is essentially providing that value while being yourself and 100% yourself, meaning expressing yourself throughout your business, all through your business, when you're selling, when you're promoting, when you're talking about what you do, when you're teaching, you know, educating, informing, entertaining, like everything you do should be an expression of you, who you are, as opposed to who you think you should be, who you think people expect you to be offering this, what you think is the perfect, you know, ideal professional, successful person, and trying to be that or trying to say things the right way. And then you end up with this kind of split personality and a split, like a total chasm between who you are and who you are in your business. And that sucks. That's the feeling that leads to burnout, right?
Okay, yes. And was there a time where you felt like when you were building your business online, you were not being yourself?
No, because I was so dead set on not being full of crap. Because I saw so much of it, there weren't many examples. When you and I started out in the online world, which is around the same time, there weren't many examples of people being themselves in it. They would, you know, they dressed in like power suits and made videos. It, like uncomfortable dancing videos, that is even back then before Reels, in a power suit, you know, against a limbo background, and did embarrassing things that you could tell was not them, or they were very buttoned up and used very old school copywriting language, you know, attention entrepreneurs, does this sound like you? It's just like, it all sounded so cheesy and ick. And then there was a rise of the other kind of what I would say is faux-authentic, like fake authentic personality of just kind of like namaste. I'm so at peace. I wish you all love and light and blessings. And that person totally was not that way as soon as the camera was off or they were not on screen. So I was rebelling against that, always saying, I am going to be me. Like, this is who I am. This is how I talk. I don't write like that. I don't talk like that. I don't express myself like that. So I think people were really, it succeeded because people were drawn to that, felt like, oh, that's real. And also it gave them permission. This is always the case when you are yourself. It gives people permission to be more themselves. And it's such a relief to see that. It's such a relief to see an example of someone being who they are. And so, oh, I didn't know you could be that way. I didn't know you could do that in business.
Exactly. And I love that you said, like, no, there wasn't any time, because I couldn't say that. I would say when I was starting out, I definitely was trying to be like everybody else online. And the worst part is I was learning from a lot of guys. And so my style was a lot more masculine than probably it is today. So I was very confused of who I was and how I wanted to put myself out there. But give me an example of, you know, you're running a business, you're making a lot of money, you're doing great things online, you have a really big community. And in all of that, give me an example of how you also show up authentically like yourself.
You know, I just wrote an email. It was like just loaded before this podcast started. And the subject line is 5 reasons I hate my business.
Oh, first of all, it's a very good subject line.
Thank you.
But wait a second, that's jarring.
I know. And I was nervous to write it, and we'll see how it's received, because it's not a mislead. It's not like you open the email and it's like, fooled you. You know, I don't really hate my business, but I might if blah, blah, blah. It's really like 5 moments when I feel like I hate my business, and I make it very clear that this is embarrassing to admit, and I don't say this a lot, and I'm admitting that it's not something that I want to express to my audience. And so it's not a quote vulnerable share, it is a vulnerable share, but also to give them this feeling of relief of like, thank God, it's not just me.
Okay, you actually do this really well, because recently I saw an Instagram reel of yours where you're sitting in a hotel room, you're like laying in bed, I think, and you went there for a speaking gig. And you literally said in the video, why do I say yes to these things? I hate this hotel room. I hate the carpet. I hate having to see people. I hate this and I don't like that. I don't like to be away from my husband. I don't want to get on a plane. I don't want to be in this weird town. It was like, you're ripping it apart. And everything you said, I'm like, I can totally relate to that. And then I got on stage and I'm like, why don't I do this more? But that's how so many of us feel. But I don't know if I'd have the nerve to be like, I hate this. And you went there. And then I felt so validated.
Thank you. Yes, I think that it gives people life to hear that they're not alone. And that one was also a little risky for me, first of all, because I hate speaking. And I also love speaking. I love having spoken. And I don't want, you know, people, event producers who might hire me to speak, to see that and be like, well, she hates it. I'm not going to hire her. I don't want her to come speak. And especially, you know, she's going to rip on the hotel that we have the event in. But everyone knows those hotels are crap. They're nobody's first choice to stay in. It's just convenient and affordable. But like, you know, the shower curtain tub depresses me to no end.
Oh my God, when that shower curtain touches my naked body, I scream. I hate it.
I hate it. It feels like you're in Psycho, right? Like I'm going to be murdered in here. That's a great example of, you know, a time when I'm like, really, I'm like, I'm just going to be me.
It translates. It makes me love you more. So I want to point out before I ask my next question that it makes you feel uncomfortable. Like even though you're super authentic and you're just sharing how it is, you also kind of question, should I really put this out there? And I think that sometimes happens when you are on your path to just being yourself. Sometimes you're like, ooh, am I being a little too much myself? But then you allow yourself to be uncomfortable and you post it. And I think that's what's most important. I want to talk about starting a business and thriving in your business in your late 40s, 50s, 60s, because you and I have talked about this a lot, and you didn't start seeing success until you were a little bit older, and you've talked about that. And some of my students will say, Amy, I am 50 years old and I feel like I missed the boat. I am trying to build a business where there's 20-year-olds dancing dances on TikTok, way more viewers than I'm getting. And how am I even going to compete? Or some of them will say, I didn't grow up with technology. I do not know how to do this. How am I ever going to make this work? Can you talk about age in building a business?
Yes. I mean, first of all, I suffer from these just crises of confidence all the time, especially when it's time to get on camera. And I'm like, oh my God, the world is run right now by 20-somethings with smooth necks. And I'm going to be just, no one's going to want to watch this because, you know, thank God for filters, but that's not what it's about. It is about, I can really relate to feeling behind, feeling like it's too late or there's too much of a learning curve. I have to, you know, get up to speed with all this technology that people who were, you know, babies when it came out, like knew how to do on their, they knew how to Zoom on their iPads when they were, you know, two. It hasn't been around that long, but you know what I'm saying. And so first of all, I would give the same advice that you would and do all the time, which is like the best time to start was, you know, yesterday or 10 years ago. The next best time to start is right now. Like that time is going to pass anyway. So if you're like, what if it takes me 5 years and I'm 55 by the time, or I'm 65 or I'm 70 by the time this is up and running and seeing any kind of success, you're going to be that age anyway. You're going to be 55, you're going to be 60, you're going to be 70. And also, there are so many people out there, just like we were saying, who want to feel less alone and want to take their cues from you. And so if you are older or considered older in this universe that is very populated by 20-somethings with, you know, lip gloss empires in the billions, I think like you can be a role model for people who are older and feel like they are never going to make it because they're too old. You can give them courage. I've seen ads from, I don't know her name, but there's somebody with a copywriting school who's, I think, in her 60s. And of course, they were showing me those ads because I was Googling like jowl surgery. And so I was like, I guess she's the right age. Let's show her this lady. But I was like, go, girl. It's awesome to see somebody who's older doing it, working it, especially in an industry that is full of 20-somethings. So I say do it. It is not too late. All this stuff is learnable. It's more and more doable by the day.
So true. I agree with that. It's becoming easier to figure it out for sure. It's never easy, but you know, there's certain aspects. However, you wrote an article that, to remind me where it was featured, is a big deal, but you talked about making your first million at a certain age. How old were you when you had your first $1 million year?
I was turning 50. So it was in my 50th year. I had my first $1 million year, and this was in Business Insider. So I wrote it in 2019, the year I turned 50. And it was a big deal. It went a little bit viral because people took so much heart from it, and people of all ages feel behind. It was about being a late bloomer and how I wouldn't have it any other way, like the lessons I'd learned and the perks of, you know, it. You can feel like, oh, there are a lot of drawbacks to starting out late or taking your time or feeling behind or doing things at a later age, but there are also so many pluses to it because you know who you are and you have already weathered failures in your life. And you also get to feel like, hey, I haven't peaked yet. Like I'm still improving as a person and as a business person. I'm still getting better rather than being like, oh, remember when I was, you know, 20 and such a hot shot and now I'm burned out and it's all downhill from here. It doesn't mean, if you succeed early, it doesn't mean that you're going to peak and burn out and flame out, but it's not unlikely. Let's just say that.
So true. I'm going to quote it wrong, but Forbes did a list of these powerful business women. And I think the majority of them on the list, it was reported that they were over 50. And I'm in my late 40s. And I often think like, okay, when I turn 50, maybe things are going to slow down. My business won't be as relevant. And then I see these examples of women in their 50s and 60s who literally, that is when they hit their stride. That is when the ideas came, the power came, the confidence came. And I thought, wait a second, I have to act as though I have a whole other chapter waiting for me, a whole other life that I could take things even up a notch. And so surrounding ourselves with other women and men that are doing great things in their 40s, 50s, 60s, I think is the smartest thing we can do because we have a lot left in us.
Yeah, we do. And by the way, people, you know, anyone who's like 75 and listening to this, it's like these babies are calling themselves older and I want to smack them, which is how I feel when someone's like, I can't believe I'm 35 and I still haven't made, I'm just like,
I bite my tongue and I just like, I do want to slap them. So if y'all want to slap us right now, we get it. We deserve it. And it's a great reminder that age is just a number and it's all in how you look at it. And so I just feel as though I attract a lot of people in their 40s, 50s, 60s, and we are just getting started, my friend. And we bring a lot of wisdom to the table that those 20 and even early 30-year-olds don't have yet. So we need to use that to our advantage.
Yes, we do. And by the way, Amy, I'm going to say, like, when you are 50, just as you are now, you're going to be a beacon for people who are like, want to know that they still have time to make it. And yeah.
I love that. I appreciate you saying that because I want to be that. Now, I want to take this one step further because it's my understanding that you believe, I want you to talk about this, you believe in a relaxed timeline when it comes to building a business, or as you put it, how dilly-dallying in adulthood worked in your favor. So I want to have this conversation with you because I believe we actually have different views on this approach to building a business. I actually like your view better, but I did not take your view. So I'm not a hustle fan, but I have to say, I definitely hustled in the very beginning to get here. Whereas I think you've always had a more relaxed timeline. So talk to me about that. I want to hear more about how you built your business and how that looked in terms of being more relaxed and not hustling and how you even chose that. Like, how did you not get in and pulled into, you know, working 10-hour, 12-hour days, working every weekend, hustle, hustle. If you want it bad enough, you're going to go for it. How did you not get pulled into all of that? Because we came up at the same time with the people that were telling us to do it. I fell into it. You didn't. So talk to me about that.
Yeah. And that is for better or for worse on either side, because I was always so impressed and envious of you and your drive and how you knew what you were doing and you knew what you were going for. You knew from the day we met, you knew what you wanted. You knew you wanted an online business. You were at the time helping people with Facebook and you went into it like, I'm going to figure out, I'm going to pinpoint who is my ideal customer and how do I help them? And you did all the interviews and you were, I think part of the hustle and the ability to hustle probably came from knowing what you wanted, seeing it. And I did not. I had a vague, like when I got into this world, I just had this vague hope, wish, dream of getting paid to be me, of doing something creative, like continuing to write, but more in my voice, because I was working in TV promos at the time. And this was a dream job for me. I'd been doing it for like decades at that time. And it was a wonderful job writing these promos for TV shows that I loved watching. I was kind of getting paid to watch TV, but I'd become complacent and started to feel like, I don't know, burned out and like I had more to say. So what I wanted was to say more, was to use my voice in some way that got me paid. And I did not see a direct line from what I wanted to getting it because there was no one really doing it. There was like the choices were in the online world, it was like create a course or, you know, become a top speaker or I didn't even really know. It's like just offer your package your knowledge and sell it. And I was like, that's not really what I want to do. I think somebody suggested even that I create a branding Bible. Like I knew we had used branding Bibles in the TV world. And I was like, I guess I could create a branding Bible for people, for online entrepreneurs. And everyone was like, do it, do it, do it. And by the end of that mastermind weekend, that retreat that we were on, I was like, I don't want to create courses. And so I didn't put any hustle into much of anything except, so my business came about sort of accidentally. I was building a website to get more TV clients, even though I was a little burned out on it and wanted something else. I was like, this is what I know how to do. This is what I get paid for. So I built a website to host my reel of TV spots. And I showed it to our friend Marie and I said, what do you think? And she was like, where's your opt-in? And I was like, my what in? And she's like, you need an opt-in. You need to, but listen to me very very carefully. Your list is your gold. The gold is in your email list. And so you have to offer some kind of freebie. It's called a lead magnet. And people sign up and they give you their email addresses in exchange for your freebie. I was like, okay, I guess I can put that, like turn the talk that I did for you, which was called 5 Secrets to Nonsucky Copy, which I presented at her first live event. I was like, right, you were there doing something totally different, like for authors social media for authors. And so I was like, could I turn that into a lead magnet? She said, absolutely, make it a PDF. So I did that. And she was like, and where's your blog? I was like, isn't it too late to have a blog? It's 2009. And she was like, no, you moron. She didn't say moron, but basically that was the tone. She's like, you of all people should have a blog. You have to have a blog. So I put those things on my website and started blogging and loved it as a creative outlet. People would sign up for my 5 Secrets to Nonsucky Copy and get on my list. Not very frequently. I didn't drive anyone to it. And then I would send them emails leading to my blog posts that were about absolutely nothing. That had nothing to do with copywriting. So they'd sign up for 5 Secrets to Nonsucky Copy, and then I would send them a blog post about my dad calling his rain boots rubbers. But that started to build a business because people liked my writing style, and they would say, can you help me with my website? Can you help me with my copy? I'm a realtor. I'm a coach. I'm a this, I'm a that. And I started taking on clients in that direction. And I wasn't putting any hustle into it because I wasn't looking to build a business. I never thought of myself as an entrepreneur. I thought entrepreneurs were people who had, you know, a line of shapewear or an app, who built an app. So I didn't consider myself an entrepreneur. And then I got fired from my biggest client, my biggest TV client. And I was like, oh, crap, I have to make up all that income. And I think that's around when we met. We discussed this on the plane. You're like, I've got to make all the income because my husband, my brand new husband, is becoming a firefighter and isn't going to see much money from that, especially not for a while. He's training. And I was like, I've got to make up six figures that I was making in TV. And so I put up a services page and let my tiny list know that I had services available for private clients. And I started building that business. But it wasn't necessarily like my dream business, something I'd always dreamt of. Like I liked it a lot and it's great to get paid for it, but it was still homework. I was still writing in someone else's voice or helping them write in their voice. And it wasn't for a long time, like 7 or 8 years, until I realized I want to get paid to write emails. I love writing emails so much. I want to get paid to write emails. And then I figured out, well, if I sell things in my emails and send them out regularly, that will get me paid to write emails. And that's how this iteration of my business came about. And it wasn't until I started seeing results from that, found out that it was possible, and holy crap, this stuff really works. That's when I started putting in some hustle. Not all the hustle. I still reject all the forms of hustle that I see out there that I see required to build a business like yours. Like I see you with a big team. I don't want a big team. That's most of it. I think that you get up early in the morning. I think you probably get up to an alarm. And I have alarm clock trauma. I don't want to do that ever.
So you don't use an alarm clock?
I do not use an alarm clock except for an early flight, which I try to avoid at all costs.
So what time do you go to bed usually and what time do you get up?
I like to go to bed between 11 and 12. I used to be a serious night owl and I'd be up till like 1 or 2 a.m. because I get creative at that hour and can really start working. But now I've become such a fan of bedtime. I just love getting into bed more than anything. And I love watching, you know, TV on my iPad or reading in bed. And I get really excited about it. Like sometimes I start getting excited about it like 4 p.m. Like I can't wait for bed. And then I need 8 hours, sometimes 9. So
I hear you. And that's super healthy for us. But it is interesting. I have a few friends that don't use an alarm clock and their body just gets used to it. You'd think if I don't use an alarm clock, I'm not getting up till noon. And that is absolutely not how it happens. When you get really good sleep, you absolutely naturally wake up and you're ready for the day.
Yeah, no, that's true. Thank goodness. Although I'm okay with it if I sleep late.
See, I love this about you. I'm so regimented that I'm like, I cannot sleep past 5:30. That's horrible. Where you're going to live longer than me for sure. Because you're like, well, if I sleep until 9, okay, that's what I needed.
Yes. Yeah. And I'm insistent on sleeping as late as I need to. I hate feeling tired. I hate feeling groggy. I hate getting up when I feel like not ready to get up. And so this is one of my favorite things about having my own business is I've structured my days so that I can be loosey-goosey all morning. Sometimes I have stuff to get done, like stuff to write, something that's like due because I want to get an email out that day. But it's still my time and I get to do it my way and I need to have my morning. I don't schedule any meetings. I will not get on a Zoom or on the phone or on anything or meet face to face until like noon earliest.
Okay, so Thursday morning I have an 8 a.m. call.
No.
On Zoom. And so this is what I love. I want to point out two things. One, we are both successful in our business and have very different styles. Two, I could learn from a little bit more of a relaxed lifestyle. I think it will give me some years on my life. But three, this is an example of you being authentically you. You could easily say, yeah, but the entrepreneurs that are most successful, they're getting up at 5:30. I mean, that's not true, but you could tell yourself that and then force yourself to do something that doesn't feel good to you. But I venture to guess you really enjoy the business and the life you've created for you. Would that be true?
It is true. And sure, there are some things that I wish I had done sooner. But I wasn't ready to.
I know you're focused on marketing and selling your digital products, but I know many of you also have physical products, and I want to talk about Shopify. Shopify is a user-friendly commerce platform that helps you, my dear online entrepreneur, build an online store and make more sales at any stage of your business. They're the force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, Brooklinen, and millions of other businesses at every size. Let me tell you why Shopify is an online entrepreneur's dream platform. It's because it helps turn your browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout experience. In fact, it converts 36% better compared to other leading e-commerce platforms. Yeah, loving that. And I don't know about you, but as an online entrepreneur, my customer's experience, especially when it comes to checking out, is so important. Plus, not only do they support your customers, they support you as the entrepreneur. Shopify's award-winning help desk is there to support your success through every question and every step of the way. There's a reason Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the U.S. because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/madeeasy. All lowercase. So go to shopify.com/madeeasy now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. That's shopify.com/madeeasy. We are online marketers, which means we have unique needs.
And there are so many options out there for paid media. Sometimes it's hard to figure out where should you go to reach your ideal audience. But here's the thing. Have you thought about LinkedIn ads? LinkedIn ads empowers marketers with solutions for you and your customers, and it allows you to build the right relationships and drive results and reach your customers with meaningful content. You do not want to sleep on LinkedIn ads. And here's the thing, 79% of content marketers said LinkedIn produces the best results for paid media. I hear it from so many of my peers, and I know you're doing important work. And with that, you want to make sure that the work you're doing is getting in front of the right people. And that's what LinkedIn ads will allow you to do. So let your marketing efforts connect with the right audience and get a $100 credit on your next campaign. So if you go to linkedin.com/Amy, you can get that $100 credit. So that's linkedin.com/Amy. Terms and conditions apply.
The only real regret I have in that sense of like feeling behind or having missed an opportunity is I wish I had jumped into running ads when ads were easy to make money from. But I didn't really have anything to, I had a blog about them. Like, so that's the one place where I feel like I kind of missed the boat. But otherwise, in terms of my whole, like just the trajectory of my life, looking at it as a whole, I've always been behind if you compare me to other people, like in terms of age, like hitting milestones, moving out of the house, finding love, getting married. I had kids at never, so that one, you know, and all those things. And then finding career success. That happened in a very slowpoke way if you compare me to other people. But why compare ourselves to anyone else? Why does it matter? We hear it like run your own race. Why is it a race?
They run your own race all the time. Of course it's a race, Belgrade. Of course it is. This is how you run a business. But tell me this. I want to go into this a tiny bit deeper because someone's listening right now that really needs to hear this. When you see other people kill it with their podcast, you don't have a podcast. When you see other people build a massive YouTube following, or they're getting on stage every other month and making bank, or they're part of a big mastermind, they're paying for the... You don't do all of that. But one, do you never experience FOMO? And two, how do you say like, yeah, that's cool, that's working for them, but it's not for me? Like, how do you stand in that without getting caught up in all of it?
Yeah. I mean, there are some things where I really wish I wanted to. Like, I really wish I wanted to have a podcast. And I mean, look at what you've built really from having a podcast. There's a lot more that goes into your business, but your podcast has fueled your growth like nothing else. Just having the audience that you've built. And I know other people who started them fairly recently who are seeing a lot of success from it and seeing all kinds of traffic from it. And I'm like, that is amazing because list building has gotten harder and harder. But for a podcast to succeed in a certain way, for it to be big, for it to get all this exposure and the kind that I would want behind it to make it worthwhile in that sense, you have to have interviews. You have to do these interview podcasts and you have to do them with some big people and be really consistent. And that involves appointments. Appointments are the one thing I want least in my life. Like an appointment to talk to you. Awesome. This is so fun for me. But you're scheduling these all day long some days. I mean, and that is exactly what I don't want my life to look like. So I wish I wanted to, but I don't want to. And therefore, I can't.
I did over like 120 interviews for my book.
Oh,
people interviewed me for their podcast. And when I think about that, I'm like, what was I thinking? But I justified it in my head. I'm glad I did it, blah, blah, blah. But here's what I love about you. You just said like, I wish I wanted that, but I don't. And I think the big distinction I want people to hear is you're really clear on who you are, what you want, and what you don't want. And you're okay in your own skin. There's times that you're like, oh, like we all get that little like angsty jealousy about someone getting this opportunity or that opportunity. I think that we're human. But you don't divulge or live there. You like really know who you are. And I don't know if you tell me I'm wrong about this. I think that comes with our age. The older we get, we are like, no, I like who I am. I'm good with that. Do you feel that?
Yes. I have always had some like resistance, again, for better or worse, to things I didn't want to do. You know, a lot of people will argue with this all day long. I consider myself an unapologetic lazy person. And everyone will say, you're not lazy. Look at everything you did for your book and look at what you do in your business. But I am when it comes to things I don't want to do. I wanted to do all that. I really wanted my book to succeed. And if I'm obsessed, I'm not lazy. But when I'm not obsessed and it's not something I feel good doing and that's fun for me, I'm very lazy and I don't want to do it. And I don't. And it's really important for me to enjoy my life. So it's not succeed at all costs. I will not succeed at the cost of enjoying my day to day.
Let's just take a moment for that one. Not succeed at all costs. And if it's going to affect your happiness day to day, then you're not doing it. And I really do commend you for that, because it's a different way of looking at business. You've also been very successful. It'd be different if I brought you on here and you made $500 last year. Like, we're talking about a very successful business. You've done really big things. Your book was very successful. We're going to talk about that in a minute, but you've done it on your terms. And I wanted you on because I wanted my listeners to hear there's different ways to do it. I did it a certain way. It has served me well. Not always glamorous or not always my favorite, and I have regrets, but it was my way. But there's a different way, and yours is so interesting and so valid just as much as anybody else's. So I want to actually talk about a little bit about what you do in your business, because my listeners are going to eat this up. So we talked about you are an expert copywriter and you help people write great copy. So you no longer write copy for other people, but you teach people how to write great copy. Would that be a fair assessment?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
So I want to talk about what's the magic sauce for writing a killer email subject line, because you just gave us a little hint at one subject line that you had wrote. I'm like, give me more of that. So we want to spike our open rates. People are struggling. I want more people to open up my email. What's a little magic sauce that you can give us there?
Yeah. Well, first of all, I'm going to start backwards. Like, once you have the subject line, so few people do this. I want you to send yourself a test of your email and see how it looks in your inbox among all the other things in there. And do you want to click it open? Like, you take a glance at it. Would you click that open? Okay, so keep that end goal in mind. You want to write something that you would click open. And I think great subject lines are casual, intimate, and human to start with. So if I think that it's a mistake to write them in title case, meaning the first letter of each word is capitalized. A lot of newsletters do this, news outlets do this, and a lot of entrepreneurs do it. And when we go through our inbox, we're going through it the same way we go through our mail, right? If you still get your mail, you pull out that wad of garbage and you stand over the trash with it and you're shuffling through it going, junk mail, junk mail, junk mail, junk mail, junk mail. Ooh, something for me. Junk mail, junk mail, junk mail. The one thing that's for you jumps out at you. That's the one you're going to, that's the exciting thing. And the same thing is true in your inbox. And that's why you want to make your subject line feel like it is, and the email, feel like it is from a person to a person, to that person, not to, hey, you guys, not to a group of people, but to one person. So casual, intimate, and human. You want to write it in very human language. And sometimes you might try not even punctuating it. When you think about texts and how we text now, if you're my age or Amy's, you've probably been told by someone younger that it is rude to put a period on the end of a sentence in a text. And I'm not saying don't ever put them in your subject line, but play with leaving it off if you're comfortable with that. And then in terms of what you're putting in it, you want to use exciting words. You want to make it provocative or curiosity evoking. And so I've seen a lot of attempts at this go wrong, where somebody might write like, why bananas are high in potassium. It's like putting in that why does not make us curious. You just told us the whole story. Okay, bananas are high in potassium. I'm not going to open that to find out why. Whereas what if you put in like, what's long, yellow, and stops leg cramps? Okay, I might know the answer, but I'm still going to click it open. And there are so many things that you can do to make this pop out, make your subject line pop out in the inbox. One technique is to use the person's first name, but not just, you need to see this, comma, Amy, but something like inserting the name in there. Like I have a really popular one that always gets opened. I use it every time we're promoting the Copy Cure. It is, I'm in love with Amy, or I'm in love with first name, and in quotes. And everybody opens that. Or you had one recently that came to me as Laura's podcast leading the top 100 charts.
Okay. Emery's going to love that you just called her out on a great subject line. I will be letting her know. But I thought that one was really good too. I was like, dang, I was confused. Okay. I didn't see that subject line. My copywriter wrote it. I got the email and I'm like, wait, there's a mistake. Why are they putting my name in the subject line? I didn't realize they did it for everyone. So that's so funny you brought that up. But yeah, I love when we use a name in the subject line.
Yeah, me too. And then like results that your audience might want. And not just in a how-to format, because that looks a little bit newslettery and kind of maybe boring. And also you only have so many words that are viewable in your subject line. So another one you had was an email list full of buyers. And then it was the like star eyes emoji. And I thought that one was really good. I was looking at like, what did I open? And that was one that I opened. And then you had one that was, and this was in title case, but I didn't mind. It was new in brackets, the money episode. And I mean, the money episode sounds exciting. And it was a really and money is a powerful word in there. So like making them short, punchy, something that evokes an ooh, or I need that, or what's that about? Something like very curiosity evoking. I had one of my most popular ones of all time is have to cancel, frowny face, like just the emoticon, and always gets like probably number one of all my subject lines because it feels like it's from a person to a person and just the immediate response, even if they know it's a newsletter, is what's this?
Yeah, what is that about?
Someone's canceling on me. What's this about? Or yay, someone's canceling because.
So I'd be like, oh, who is it? Let me look at that one. But okay, these are so good. The fact that you could just rattle these off, like I know this is what you do best, but I do love these tips. And I was curious, you know, we're moving into 2024. Are you seeing any trends, like trends that we should be paying attention to when it comes to copywriting? Because I tell all my students, you have to become a student of copywriting. Sure, you can hire a copywriter. I have a full-time one now, but there were years that I wrote my own copy and I could do it in a moment's notice if I had to. That is a skill we all should have, I believe. So I think this is a really important topic. Any trends you're seeing? And as you answer that, one thing I've noticed is the newsletter is back. Tell me wrong here. Okay, you're seeing it too? Because for years, I'm like, no one wants to sign up for your newsletter. You have to do a freebie, a cheat sheet, a checklist. That's changing.
It is changing. I agree completely. I was actually going to mention that. I think that is a trend. And it's possibly from the rise of Substack. I think people are into Substack. Substack is a newsletter platform. It's kind of like blogging used to be, but it's all in, you know, this one platform that you don't own, which is a drawback. But one thing on Substack that makes me very tempted by it, like to try it, and I just don't know how to integrate it into my, like my other format, which is ConvertKit, is the discoverability. So right now, Substack has great discoverability. So like for anybody who's just starting out and not necessarily going to use their email for marketing, which most of your audience listening, I think, does want to do. Like you can't tag people in Substack. You can't, there's so much you can't do. It's very limited, but discoverability in that platform is great. Like just people find you, they recommend you, like everyone recommends each other Substacks, the platform recommends you to other readers. I don't know how long that's going to last and be effective because it's getting a little crowded. But that's not the trend, you know, when you ask any trends we should be aware of in copywriting or like what's the secret right now to making, I think it is an anti-trend, and it is my, I am against AI for writing your copy. I think that AI is great as for creating frameworks. If you don't know where to start, you're intimidated by the blank, you know, the blank page and that cursor. And like, how do I structure this email or sales page or whatever it is? Okay, fine. But I think it is terrible at sounding like you. No matter what prompts you put in, it's going to sound like everybody else. Everyone's stuff sounds the same. So what's going to stand out? The real trend here is to write like yourself, and or write like your client, if you're the copywriter writing for the client, and make it human. Humanity is the trend.
Ooh, I love that. Amen to that. You know, I was going to tell you, I think part of the trend of why newsletters are on the rise again is because so many people are like, you could just use AI. And in my mind, because we're thinking about creating a brand new newsletter, I'm like, there is no way that my newsletter is going to be generated all through AI. I'd love to get started with AI, the frameworks, the ideas, totally right. But there's no way that I would feel comfortable with that. So I love that that's what you said. And if newsletters are on the rise, mine's going to stand out a whole lot better than someone else's if it's coming directly from me or my content.
100%. If it has your ideas in it, the way you express yourself, your language, which I know, like, you have put out so much content, you have so many podcasts, people have heard you talk so much that a copywriter has access to the way you talk, and you have certain speech patterns that somebody could imitate in your emails, and they do a really good job, the people that you hire. But AI can't do that the same way. And it's so goofy, the stuff it comes up with. When you try to, if you try to be funny, it'll just talk about comedy. It'll be like, this is funnier than, you know, Chelsea Handler, you know, speaking to, they just, it doesn't know how to be funny. It's not good at surprise.
So true.
It's not a human. So what is gripping to us, what is, what's funny, entertaining, gripping, compelling is surprise. Is something that we don't expect. AI can't do that for you. Only a human can do that.
AI is never going to tell the story of your dad's rain boots being called rubbers.
Never.
Not going to happen. And that I live for. So good. Okay. So I want to end this interview with talking about your brand new book called Tough Titties. First of all, you are, okay, I was going to say ballsy, which now I'm just kind of mixing up something there. Yeah, you're ballsy for calling your book Tough Titties. So talk to me about why you wrote this book. It is not necessarily a business book, but I read the whole thing and I felt like I could see my business through the lens of your really funny stories, the mistakes you've made along the way, the insecurities you've had, just your journey. So why did you write the book and who's it for?
Yeah. So it's, I wrote the book because it's the book I always wanted to write. I just didn't know what that book was for a long time. Like, how would this end? How would this arc? Because I hadn't lived that life yet. And I hadn't reached, I guess, at the point of success where I felt like I could write about my mistakes in like the past tense, you know? So it's a memoir in essays, like a coming of age set in New York City in the 80s, 90s, early aughts that my husband refers to as loser Sex in the City, which is not inaccurate, but it is also, it is kind, it's a stealth personal development book, a stealth business book, because it's got a lot of career fails and looking to find my thing and my calling and who I am, as well as my person and relearning to be myself after suffering from, you know, being bullied in sixth grade, which many of us have, and like recovering from that and being like, okay, it's safe to be myself. It is safe if somebody dislikes me. Like, one person disliking me can't ruin my life now that I'm not in sixth grade. So there's a lot of that in it. I just always wanted to write a book. So when you ask, why did you write this book? It is the book I wanted to write. And now was finally the time. Now I had permission to, some permission to. The publishing industry didn't necessarily say, oh, sure, you're famous enough to write a memoir. They said the opposite. They're like, you're not a household name. Most of them said, you're not a household name. You're not, you know, you're not Britney. So you don't get to just write a book about yourself, about your life with fun anecdotes.
Here's another example of you going against the grain. You didn't write, so you're an online entrepreneur. You didn't write about business per se. You did a memoir. You're not necessarily famous. You had people telling you that's not a good idea. I am sure some people were against that title.
Yes. Well, not just some people.
Right? Like, it was a big deal. You didn't even get to have a billboard in Times Square, which was offered to you. You didn't even get your Times Square billboard because they wouldn't put tough titties on the title or on the screen. But you chose a title that people said, don't do that. How did you get beyond that? I would have been like, okay, people are saying I shouldn't do it. I shouldn't do it.
Yeah. Well, actually, nobody told me this title is going to be problematic. I knew that the book would be hard to sell because it wasn't the book that my audience necessarily would go for and expect. It wasn't a natural home run for an audience of like entrepreneurs and aspiring writers and those kinds of people. And it also wasn't a natural home run for my business. Like, okay, take the, you know, use the QR code in the back to take the quiz on my site and opt in to like, how tough are your titties, et cetera. So there were a lot of things going against it in terms of selling the book. But I think that the title actually helped sell it and got attention. And I knew from the start, this was the title. There was no other title, and I still don't know what I would have done if I had to change the title. So I'm glad that I had that title, but it was banned from Times Square, a place where, you know, you can see the Naked Cowboy's package through his thin, tidy whities, and you've got people walking around with actual real bare titties with nothing but like some pasties on them. But Times Square didn't want the billboard, and, you know, my publisher was supposed to, they had budgeted for ads on Amazon. Their ads got rejected. And that's a bummer. That is a bummer. The Times Square billboard, fine. I made a video about it being rejected that was almost better, almost got more juice than maybe a billboard would have, though a billboard would have been nice. But I think not a lot of books get in Target anyway, so it's not necessarily one that would have been in Target, but Target's not having it, and I think it's because of the title, possibly. So there are drawbacks to it, but there's no other title to me that would have worked and that would have spoken to all the different themes in the book, one of them being a not a very supposed to person and saying it's an expression that means like, too bad. And that is my reaction to anything I am supposed to do in life in general. Like, you're supposed to do it this way. Oh yeah, tough titties. And then also there's, you know, titties and they are a theme. There is a titular chapter.
Well, you're going to have to find it and probably laugh a whole lot. I laughed so hard, like, and I was audible. So here I am with earbuds walking around in the airport laughing so hard and people are looking at me, but I didn't care. So I loved every minute of it. I feel like you wrote a masterpiece. I love that you are unapologetically yourself. And I have known you for many, many years. So at least 15 years. I knew you the first year I started this business and you are still the same person as you were back then. You're just richer now. And also probably even more yourself than ever before. And I love that about you. So if people want to learn more about you and what you're all about, obviously they can find the book wherever books are sold. It's all over online. But also, where can they find out more about you?
Yeah, please come over to talkingshrimp.com. That is my digital home. And you'll find the book there and you'll find my freebies there and all kinds of help with writing your emails that get opened. And then on, I'd say Instagram is my main platform of choice. And I am at Laura Belgray there.
Perfect. All right. We'll put all the links in the show notes. Laura, thanks for being a true friend for so many years. And thanks for coming on the show. I can't wait for people to learn more about you.
Thank you, Amy. I love you so much. This was a blast.
Bye, friend. Every time I chat with my friend Laura Belgray, I just feel as though it makes me happy. I like grin from ear to ear. I think one, because we have a lot of history together. And two, I love hearing about her journey. Three, I love hearing about how different it was from mine, but we both were able to make it work in different ways. I think that's an important message of this episode. You know, hearing Laura talk about the fact that it took her a while to find her calling, and also the fact that she doesn't do anything that other people think she should do if she doesn't want to do it, I think that is powerful. And I think we could all take a little page out of her book. I hope you felt inspired in this episode. And I also hope if that book speaks to you that you go grab it, because get ready to laugh a lot. It's fantastic. All right, my friends, I cannot wait to see you next week. Same time, same place. Have a wonderful week in the meantime, and I'll talk to you soon.